Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's December 25th, 2015. You're listening to the best poker cast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And ho, 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 I'm Scott Long.
Happy Saturnalia, everyone.
I'm dreaming of a sunny Christmas.
I saw the Modern Family.
That live in snow.
Did you see the Modern Family where they go to like Northern California hoping for snow, and they get up there and it's like 90 degrees and everybody's wearing sweaters and coats. And at the end, there's like, oh, it's Christmas miracle. There's snow, and they're like, no, there's a forest fire down the street. That's ash. It is that hot down here.
I got it this year. I love that show, and then I just thought it got too cartoony last year. So
yeah, it's starting to get that way.
Still recorded, so it's still on the DVR. In case I changed my mind, but
it is getting that way. You're right, and that tends to happen with a lot of shows.
Yeah,
it's too bad
because it's a really good, sweet show.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's okay. I still enjoy it, but I agree with you 100%. So we got some news. Lots of news today, considering it's usually the slow time of year.
Yep.
Pretty remarkable.
Well, the first thing is the 2016 World Series of Poker will run May 31st to July 18th. And the world's biggest poker festival is adding to last year's most talked about event, the $565 buy-in Colossus. This year will feature two additional starting flights, a $7 million guarantee up from $5 million last year, and a guaranteed first place prize of at least 1 million Skittles.
$1 million.
Also, each flight will play down to the money, so players can cash multiple times in the event. That's going to be fun for Player of the Year points.
Yeah.
And the full schedule of events is expected to be released in January or February, but that's what we know now.
Have we ever had that or heard of that where you can keep cashing in one event and make multiple?
I've heard it in other events. Obviously, I don't think I've ever heard it in a World Series event.
So. Yeah.
But yeah, there's some other events around the country that I noticed that do this where you can cash multiple times.
Because I know we have, like, we had the when we did the Ante Up Poker Tour at Derby Lane, they had they called it the biggest little tournament or whatever, and you could,
right. You
can go to a certain point and turn in chips and get your buy-in back or get your money back, but then you have to go four with one stack.
That's a little different, yeah.
So it's a little different, but yeah, I guess you could do that, but it just seems so bizarre in the World
Series.
Actually,
our Ante Up events on Thunder Valley, a couple of them, you can actually cash multiple times.
You can cash and then re-enter again.
It ended up being is that they didn't want to bring back players day two. And this is a good debate that's going on right now. You know, if you're having a multi-day event, is it fair to bring back players that aren't in the money? Because you play all night, and then you go, you show up in the next day, and you get knocked out, and you got nothing to show for it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people that say, "Hey, if I'm gonna bring players back to my room the next day, I want to guarantee them that they're walking out of here with something."
Yeah, they're coming back with something.
So it gets tricky when you have multiple flights because you know you have different ways of thinking that. So I think that what they decided now, and this is how the Thunder Valley one is that you. To get around that, there is a possibility that you could cash multiple times because they're going to pay a certain percentage of the field that day, and then even though it's not in the official pay table,
right?
So it's possible.
You think
I don't
the
think
world,
it's happened yet? But
you think
I,
the World Series
this one,
does it this way, releasing the information now, just so that this could spark some topic of debate and discussion, so that they can refine their schedule? Or are they just doing it because, hey, we can sort of spread this out over a few months?
That's
to
a good
make
question. I'm sure that's what you're saying is a pleasant benefit of it. I'm guessing that it's, you know, it's a lot like anything. So, you know, I do this big music festival in Baltimore every year at the end of April or May, and all the freaky freaks on the boards are like, when's the date going to be this year? So we're all reserving hotel rooms for like four different days. So right. We don't have it, right?
Right.
And then they're like, why can't they just come out with a date so we know? And then, particularly this year, the main hotel actually made you pay up front with no cancellation.
Wow.
Because they probably got tired of like being sold out for 4 weeks and then like empty for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Right. So, I think so the people are like, why can't they just announce a date? So I think that's part of this, too. I think people just want to know, and particularly with how busy the poker schedule is. Not that anybody really does a lot during the World Series anyhow, but, the sooner they get the information out, the less whining they hear from people about
this. Yeah. Of course, if you don't know what the actual schedule is, you still can't really do anything.
Very good.
Not until January or February, so it really doesn't do anything. And it's almost always May 31st to July 18th anyway. It's just because they don't really care what days of the week they fall on.
I think it was interesting, too, in this press release, too. It was the dates, which, of course, is an easy thing to headline, right?
Right.
But they went on a lot of detail about the classes and not a lot of detail about anything else. Of course, they mentioned the date of the seniors event because that's always a big thing, and a couple other small things. But it's almost kind of like incrementally trying to get two or three headlines out of the story, right?
Yes.
Because if you wait and announce the dates with the schedule and with all the new stuff, then everything gets buried into one big story, right?
Right.
So there are no dummies. We're talking about on the show now with the dates and this Colossus thing, and then the schedule's going to come out, and we're going to talk about that, and then they're probably going to say, hey, there's still a couple more tournament announcements coming in 3 weeks, and then we'll talk about that.
Yeah. They're like ESPN and Tim Tebow. Tim Tebow had lunch today at a local diner. It's incredible. Let's talk about the ramifications of this. And tomorrow, we'll talk about what he ate. It's true, they try to milk everything. So I mean, I can't blame them. That's how you keep the branding machine running, I guess. So, well, that's cool. Good, looking forward to what comes out.
Yeah, I think this Colossus change will help with some of the problems they had with it last year too, with it being so crazy with people buying into multiple flights and not being there and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think it's a good step for them. So it'll be interesting to see whether how big the Colossus gets this year. Because a lot of people, I think, were turned off by it last year.
We'll see. $7 million guarantee. That's huge.
Yeah, so they had to do something, right? So
yeah.
Should help. All right, and this is big news, too, for our fans in Kentucky, which I don't know how many that is, six, maybe seven. But Kentucky judge has ruled in favor of the state, which had sued the owners of PokerStars, alleging the online poker site violated the state's anti-gambling laws, and has awarded the state $870 million in damages. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Lawyers for the Poker Players Alliance have asked the judge to let them get involved, saying the 14,000 online poker players in Kentucky should be the beneficiaries of any money collected, since they were the citizens who lost the money playing on the site. That doesn't seem like that's going well with the state officials.
Yeah, that's a lot of money, man. And the thing is when that all happened, too, PokerStars had no foothold in America as far as being anywhere in their eyes is legally in the country. It was offshore, and so now that they're here, they feel more comfortable going after them, because I don't think anything would have happened had they still stayed outside of the United States, right?
I don't know. I think they probably felt like it would be harder to collect, but...
Right, that's what I mean. It would be like a judgment and time, right? Moral victory, but not...
Now they're pretty confident.
Yeah.
I would think they're pretty confident to get the money, but that's a lot of money for one little state, and so it was interesting. The state officials are saying that the Poker Players Alliance is really in cahoots with PokerStars to limit the amount of damages.
Well, I mean, there's no denying PPA has an interest in these.
Well, it's an interesting
sites,
argument, but, right? So yeah. You collect this money saying that our citizens were wronged, but so if you're saying that, then shouldn't it go to the citizens that were actually wronged?
Right, exactly.
Right? Rather than Joe, who's just a baseball fan, has never played poker ever, and all of a sudden he gets a check. Hey, thanks, Kentucky.
Yeah, exactly. Put that in their coffers and pay for more, horse racing facilities.
Because, that's not gambling.
Because that's not gambling at all. Oh, the hypocrisy of it all.
So, we'll see how this goes. So, if any of our listeners are in Kentucky and feel like they want to buy a piece of Annie up, let us know.
Yeah, $870 million. That's coincidentally the price to buy Annie Up Empire. That's all you need. $870 million. Come forward. We'll sell grudgingly.
All right. This next item I knew was going to come at some point. Pro poker player Tommy Chen has received a warning from the Nevada Gaming Commission after his Twitch feed showed him using a heads-up display while playing online poker in the state. and the use of external applications while playing online poker is against state law. And many players said they thought that Shen's penalty wasn't severe enough. So I knew this was coming for a couple of reasons. One, people cannot lay off of these HUDs, as they're called, or poker stoves, or all this other stuff, right?
Right.
That's what makes them successful at poker, and that's why these gaming commissions are banning them, right? So I knew there are people out there using them, right? So that doesn't surprise me. And then this rise of Twitch, where everybody's got to be a star, right? Yeah. Hey, watch me play poker tonight, because I'm cool. And so it sounds like, I don't know this guy at all, but it sounds like in the stories that what people are saying is that he forgot to turn it off, because he should have been smart enough to know that if you're broadcasting to the entire world that you're doing something illegal, that somebody's going to notice, right? And otherwise, he probably uses it, so.
How do you use it without playing? I mean, in other words, so you got to memorize how these people play by the stats and then say, I'm going to look them. I guess that's what you would do, right? You'd sort of file that information away.
You're not going to be as strong of a competitor without the stuff on your screen, right?
Yeah.
You're actually going to have to play poker the way Darwin invented. All by yourself, right? Which I think is interesting, too. So if you're a player that does use these things, which obviously is going to help your game, right?
Right.
Why would you then want to Twitch yourself out there to the world when you know you're not going to be playing your best?
Yeah.
Wouldn't you just want to like be in the shadows altogether? I guess this goes back to the whole ego of poker, right?
Right.
Well, I need to crush the game, so I'm going to use this stuff, but then I also want everybody to watch me crushing the game, so I got to be on Twitch, and then you just got to, you know, hope that you don't screw up and miss.
Oh, man. I tell you, I never used those things, ever.
No, I never did either.
And it probably explains why my bank account was zero when Black Friday happened. But
17 cents on Full Tilt, baby.
Yeah, but I just don't, I don't know. It's hard enough for me to keep track of what's going on as it is, never mind to look at all those stats and then decipher that and still act within the 15-second countdown, and I just don't have the brain for it. But yeah, it seems kind of funny that
multitask.
The guy's a pro, and he is playing online, and he's probably destroying it, and why does he need to broadcast it? And you're right, it's got to be ego. And how do you not know? See, to be honest with you, I didn't know that using those things were illegal. I thought it was merely just information.
Well, they haven't been. I mean, it is in Nevada now because it's regulated. You remember? Because this is kind of the thing that we've always talked about. Some people are like, oh, I don't want any regulation for online poker. This is really kind of why you want it, is to level the playing field. Now, obviously, it's not being successful here because this guy obviously was able to use it and only got caught because he was an idiot and
Used Twitch.
So I don't know how often he's used it before, how often other people are using it. But it's supposed to, this is what regulation is supposed to be. It's supposed to level the playing field and make sure we're all playing the game at the same technological level. You know, obviously, better player you are, the better player you are. But you shouldn't be aided by something that somebody else doesn't have.
Let me ask you, though. That's an interesting point you brought up, and I guess I want to dissect it a little more. If the technology is available, why, you know what I mean? How is that an advantage to him if you're choosing not to use it? Like, I never use it, and that was my own thing.
That's a very good, strong argument that right? some players make. I mean, this goes back to our fantasy, daily fantasy sports argument, right?
Right.
Isn't the skill involved writing the algorithm that figures out that I'm supposed to sit Dez Bryant this week, right?
Yeah.
Versus, and you don't do it, you're just, oh, I hate the Cowboys, so I'm not going to, you know.
And I do hate the Cowboys, too. That was a great analogy there.
But, so, yeah. So, I mean, so there's that argument, but then there's the argument that is it too much? Is it really, is the skill involved being able just to decipher numbers? Or is the skill actually being able to pick the right players to put in your lineup or to make the right bet size against the opponent?
Yeah. Well, it always goes back to Cincinnati Kid. Remember they let the guy in the game with the tables and he's keeping track of all the stats and writing down what the odds are and then using that in the, and they let him do that. They have the capability of grabbing a piece of paper and pencil and writing it down, and they choose to play by feel, and you know, hey, this heads up display is available and the guy chooses to use it, and I don't know. I'm not saying it's legal. I mean,
the argument
against
it is that eventually the game is going to dry up, right? This is kind of what's happening in the daily fantasy sports before the whole House of Cards came down, is a lot of players were starting to realize. I was even out with somebody this week, too, that used to play, and then he said, you know, before all this happened, he started realizing that the same five names won every tournament every week.
Yeah.
And then it only takes you seeing that once or twice to go, something's up, right? and then you're like, then it takes you after you're like, I don't really know what's up, but obviously these guys know a lot more than I do, so I'm going to quit playing.
Yeah.
And then it ends up being, and then it dries up. So, I mean, this is, it's kind of like, you know, the whole, with that old fable where you kill the goose or to get the golden eggs, right?
Yeah.
So you let it live, so it keeps, you know, so, and this is, problem is that greed gets involved, and you're like, hey, I'm a better poker player using all these tools, yeah, and I can win a lot of money without thinking long term that eventually once you've won all the money, then there's no more money to win.
Hey, think about the technology angle is, you know, then you have some guys who have the ability, because they pay for a faster internet, to be able to have more tables going at once, and is that fair that he's bilking more people than I can bilk because I can only afford the internet to go 25 megabits per second instead of 50. You know what I mean? You can really take the technology angle very far to trying to prove that, sure, this is, yeah, fine, and that's not, shouldn't be illegal. But if that's the way they're regulating it, that's the way they're doing it, and just be grateful they have it, I guess, you know, that they have it in Nevada.
I mean, the reality is we can never shepherd in technology, right?
Nah.
The internet's a great thing, but it's, there's no way to stay on top of everything on it. So, I mean, this is just the reality of going forward with anything. That there's always going to be people out there that are better at technology than we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And nothing, you know, like, you know, trying to buy concert tickets, you know, like, you know, keep refreshing. All right, 10 o'clock. Oh, sold out. What the fuck?
Sold out.
What?
How can that be?
How can that be? There's always somebody that knows how to do it better than you do. So, that's the way it's going to be. So.
All right, any updates? Ameristar East Chicago and Miami Poker Society are the latest poker venues to commit to hosting an Restock the Shelves event for Annie Up, our charity food bank initiative that we host with Blue Shark Optics.
English today? Is that a new language you're coming up with?
I'm awesome.
Commit to hosting an event for Annie Up's Restock the Shelves charity food bank initiative.
That's what I said.
Oh, you missed the words all around.
I know, because I'm saying it differently.
They were just in a different order.
I was saying it differently.
Okay, all right.
A Restock the Shelves event that we host at Blue Shark Optics on January 18th. And many participating rooms have added event details, including extra chips and raffle tickets for donations of food and cash. Get details on all of our Restock events, including how you can volunteer for Team Annie Up by visiting AnnieUpMagazine.com/restock, and encourage your favorite poker room to host an event, too.
We had one of our fans, Ken Allard, this week, said, hey, raise his hand, I'm in. I'm going to represent you at Foxwoods. So,
awesome.
If Ken can do it, all the rest of you listeners out there can do it too.
He's a chef, right? I'm at Moneymaker.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's awesome.
One of our contests, yeah, had the little lessons from Moneymaker.
Awesome. And also, we'll only have staterooms reserved for our April 18th Annie Up Poker Cruise out of Port Canaveral, Florida through February 1st. So book today. You got to get going. And there's still time to join us on our January 24th cruise out of Los Angeles as well. Get all the details on this cruise and our other sailings to Alaska and the Caribbean next year at AnnieUpCruises.com. Pretty exciting stuff.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, each week we spotlight a listener who calls our hotline, 206-424-6145, or emails us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com. And if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Floor and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. This week's prize is 1 month of free poker strategy videos from One Hand at a Time, home of poker instructional videos online. Annie Up listeners save $30 by registering at onehandatatime.com/annieup. Comes from Larry Weeks. He says, I've been listening to other poker podcasts. What? What do you mean you've been listening to other ones?
This is not monogamous.
All right.
People can, swing around if they want.
He says, I constantly hear young 20-something poker pros say they started playing poker online at 15, 16, 17, even 18 years old. On one show, the hosts were laughing about one pro who was 16 when he won the Sunday Million on PokerStars. If the lawmakers who seek to update the Wire Act listen to all these podcasts, they will have all the ammunition they need to promote their point of view. I am for online poker, but this is not a smart thing to continue to do.
Larry, I agree with you. You'll never hear Chris and I talk about playing online poker when we were 16.
That's right. Or 15.
Mostly because I wasn't around.
The internet wasn't invented yet.
Yes. But that, yes, you will never hear us talking about that. But no, seriously, yeah, this is, again, it goes back to what we're talking about with the Twitch and the, you know, these people, it just, it becomes commonplace in their world to do things that are not kosher, sometimes illegal. So they're just blatantly talking about it without thinking about the consequences now. So again, it's just, it's bravado, I think. I don't listen to these other podcasts, but that's my guess.
Right.
Hey, I was 16 when I won a million. That's great, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's, ooh, you're awesome. But you're right. I mean, once it's on the internet, people can hear it. And then this is exactly what Colt showed hearing on Capitol Hill. We're trying to get online poker regulated. It's going to say, see, you can't do it. Because kids are playing. Kids are playing online, and that's going to destroy families.
Is this not also an opportunity to go the other direction with it and say, this is why we need to regulate it and have it?
Oh, yeah,
so we
absolutely.
Can stop
but
the
that's
16
a harder, that's an uphill battle then, right?
Right. But I still...
Now,
still,
now you're throwing your brethren under the bus, right? Which right. I have no problem doing. But right. you're essentially saying, hey, yeah, we need to regulate this because all these people are doing bad things. And then the people that are against it immediately focus on all the bad things they're doing. That's why we don't need to have it at all, right?
Well, again, you can just go the other way and say, why do we have alcohol? The prohibition did not work. And you can't say, so you put a regulator on it. You say you can't drink until you're 21. And there's a reason why you put a regulation on it. Because adults want to do what adults want to do. And children need to be regulated. There's
yeah,
no reason to stop us from playing
that, right?
gambling.
I agree with that argument. But the problem with it and selling it, again, we're not talking, these lawmakers are not all Einsteins, right?
Right.
So the problem with that is it's easy for them to understand the bartender or the liquor store clerk, you know, carding someone and training them to, you know, figure out a fake ID from a real ID. That makes sense. And that seems like they can control it, right? When you get into computers and this, ooh, internet, I'm scared, you know, how do you... It's harder to convince someone. I think this is a big problem with the poker sites. How do you convince lawmakers or regulators that you can keep a 16-year-old from playing poker?
Hmm.
Because you really can't, right?
I guess.
You could do some certain things. You could, you know, make sure you have to have a credit card, which these people can't have until they're a certain age, or you can have them send an ID in, or, you know, do all kinds of age verification stuff, right? But at the end of the day, I mean, a long time ago, actually, on our show, remember we had that one guy that, back in the Times days, where he won, like, a bracelet or something, or finished in the World Series, and we had him on the show, and he talked about, yeah, my kid play every once in a while, play a couple hands.
Yeah.
And there's no way around that. There's no way you could prevent somebody who's done all the proper age verification from letting his kid or nephew or somebody sit down and play.
The same thing with alcohol. You can't stop a parent from giving
exactly.
a kid a drink. Or so I think that's the argument, too, that they would
tangible,
have to use.
Again, because you're live when you're doing that transaction, right? You know,
right.
where online, there's nothing. You're not seeing anybody, right? So people are just scared of what they don't understand.
Yeah. I agree with Larry, though. I mean, you shouldn't really be giving them ammunition to ban it, you know, by saying children are playing. It's just it's stuff that you really shouldn't be talking about. But then again, we're talking about it now, just because, you know what I mean, we brought up this letter, and now we've talked about it. So we are just as guilty now for doing it. Larry, you're just as guilty for bringing it up to a public show. So we're all screwed.
Well, I suspect that these people talking about it, too, don't fully understand what they're doing, either.
Yeah.
You know, they think, these will probably be, you know, we get emails all the time, oh, yeah, online poker's coming back next year, right? I'm like, huh?
What?
What makes you think that? Oh, well, it's got to be, right? Because of revenue? No.
Yeah, no.
So I suspect that these people are the same way. They're just, like, you know, got blinders on. Like,
yeah.
You know, hey, you know, this is what we did back then, and it's going to come back. It's no big deal, and it is a big deal. It's a delicate political game we're playing now. We need to be careful.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@antiupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. Comes from our good friend Vic. He's supplying a lot of content on here and
he
on
is.
The Poker Radius.
He's an honorary co-host.
Yeah, I think we should call him when one of us needs to go out of town for a week. He says, I was playing in a 1-2 no limit hold'em game. One of the new brushes was in the box dealing, and it was obvious it was her first time. She had dealt half a dozen hands with mistakes on all of them when this hand occurred. Under the gun, player folds. Next player raises at $10. Next player calls. I call. Next player folds. Small blind announces he was dealt 3 cards. The big blind says, it's a missed deal and mucks. Another player tosses in his cards. The dealer drops the stub and starts to rake in the mucked cards. The three players with $10 in the pot say it's not a missed deal and there has been substantial action. The floor is called. He says it's the player's responsibility to protect their hand, and this includes making sure they have the correct number of cards, and since there has been action, the hand is live. With that, some of the players that tossed their cards in prematurely now reach out to grab them back. But it's not 100% clear which cards are theirs, drawing protests from the players who still have cards in their hands. The floor notices the dealer wasn't holding the stub. There's no way to tell whose cards are whose, nor do we know for certainty if the burn and turn cards have been jumbled up as well. The floor changes his ruling, saying that since the stub has been compromised, it's a missed deal. Bets are returned and the hand is redealt to the dismay of the three $10 bettors. Could this have been handled differently? Couldn't the stub and mucked cards have been reshuffled and the hand continue?
Elliot says, close supervision of this break-in dealer is quite necessary. Generally, when a new dealer is thrown to the deep end of the pool, it is in tournament tables, where with their bets of more even amounts, fewer players seeing the flop, turn, river, no promotions to watch for usually, and a lack of rake and jackpot to drag. To see the green dealer at a cash game and not closely supervise the table is not fair to the players, the dealer, or the casino. After the third or fourth hand completed with an air, the players would have to be agitated enough that the casino would want the dealer off of the game. As for the hand, the supervisor's solution was the best way to solve this one. If the dealer is able to stop the mass mucking of hands instigated by the big blind and never dropped and mucked the stub of the deck, this hand should have been played to its conclusion and not have been misdealt. The irretrievable deck is a linchpin to the supervisor's reaction. He correctly tried to rule that the players are to protect their hands, and misdeals are declared by the supervisor, not the players. Once he saw that there was no way to continue on with the live, unused cards, he ruled a post-action misdeal. Shuffling up the muck is not a good solution here, especially if the game has active jackpots and promotions. An experienced dealer in this spot would have prevented the big blind from declaring a misdeal and probably would have held onto the deck. The hand would have played out as normal after the small blind's hand was declared dead due to having too many cards. The small blind would have revealed this error before too many players acted. A misdeal would be the correct call.
Looks like you're suffering from reading words in the opposite direction as well. This is not easy to read sometimes. It's early morning, man. We're just waking up.
It's Christmas Eve, man.
But he's right. I'm not really sure if the dealer dropped the stub. I guess he said the stub came after, but that's why the big blind had said it before.
Yeah,
I'm going to guess
once the big blind told the dealer there was a misdeal, and that's what happened here, right? Yeah. The dealer didn't realize it.
Yeah.
And she saw cards being flung out another way, then she's like, boom, dropped the stub, and we're going to make it a... In her mind, there was a misdeal at that point, because the guy told her it was. So.
Yeah, it's tough to have a brand new dealer doing something like that and not even supervising her. Being over her shoulder for a little bit and throw him into the trial by fire. That's brutal.
Yeah, it's interesting that he said that usually you start him out in tournaments, which makes perfect sense.
Because
it's a lot easier at that point.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I've never seen a break-in dealer not have somebody watching them.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really odd that this... I mean, I think... I'm not sure if I might have edited this out, but I think he said it was late, after midnight or sometime when it's, the room's a little slower. But you have an active game, so it doesn't matter, right?
Yeah, I mean, you said it's obvious it was her first time, but I don't... I mean, maybe it wasn't. Maybe she just
I'm going to go ahead and give him the benefit of the doubt if she made a mistake on seven straight hands.
No, I know, but, I mean, never know. Could just had a bad day.
Yeah, at what point do the players... At this point, any player at the table will speak up and say, hey, I know everybody's going to learn somewhere. I'm not trying to pick on this woman, but obviously she's not ready for prime time here.
Right.
You pull her out and, you can take her to another table and do some practice hands, and then bring her back again. Tonight's not her night, obviously, right?
Yeah. Okay, guess what? End of the year? Get to complete O'Malley's move. Perfect timing. Let's refresh our memories with part one.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week we're still in that same 50-cent, $1, no-limit Omaha 8 game. The table hasn't changed. Neither the players nor the action. Timid pre, slight aggression post. Our stack has dipped a little as we sit with 150. The small blind posts, we post our big blind. The action is folded around to the cutoff, who calls. Small blind calls, and we look down at the 8 of hearts, 5 of clubs, 4 of clubs, deuce of clubs. Okay, so this isn't a great hand, but it does have some potential, and we can check. So we do. The flop gives us reason for pause, as the 8 of spades, 5 of hearts, 4 of hearts comes down. This is an interesting flop. We've hit 3 pair, and currently have 6 full house outs. Of course, only 2 remaining 8s give us the nut high. The cutoff is an older gentleman who seemingly has the game figured out. However, he got caught running a big bluff earlier, and has since turned over another bluff. Other than that, he's shown down nut hands most of the time. We've seen about 7 of his other hands. He sits with $95. The small blind in this case, seemingly, is inconsequential. The small blind checks, and it's to us. So, we have 1 player to act behind us, and 3 pair. Are we betting, or are we checking? What's the move?
This is an interesting one, and not just because it's this weird no-limit Omaha.
Right.
I think players always get too overexcited about flopping 3 pair, and in this case, a low is already on the board that we're almost dead to. So that means we're playing for half the pot, which is bad, and we may even need to some help to get that, which is bad.
Yeah.
However, all this has more meaning for facing a bet, so, you know, since no one's bet yet, that's a different story. So I think we have some options. I'm not sure we want to do them, but we have some options. Since there was no raise pre-flop, I think we could feel a little bit more confident that there's no ace-deuce or ace-tray out, which means this flop likely crippled everyone else's low as it did ours. And if they're not excited about their high or their high potential, a bet here might get us the whole pot, which is always the goal. So this is kind of the flip side. We always talk about, hey, you gotta win the whole pot, right?
Right.
But you don't also have to show down to win the whole pot. You just got to bet the people out of the pot to get the whole pot. So it's a little dicey. It's tough to do. Tough to pull off. So, there are plenty of downsides to betting, obviously, which I think I'm already thinking about. So I'm going to go ahead and take a 3-hour stab for now, but we'll likely fold if I get any pressure, and certainly we'll be cautious the rest of the hand if I'm called, but I'm going to take $3 just to see if I can get everybody to fold and take this pot that I have no business winning.
That's interesting take. I think I'm just going to check and hope for a free shot at the boat on the turn, and if I don't get it, I'll see what they're willing to bet and whether or not I want to call. For me to bet first, it opens up. There are some people to act behind me, and it opens up the betting again. Why waste $3 if I don't need to? It's an unraised pot, so it's not that big of a pot anyway to take down and to just throw $3 or any amount out there, hoping to get everyone to fold. And in Omaha, everyone loves their hand. So I don't know. I think I'm just going to check. Hope I hit the. I don't even have the nut low. Are nut high, I mean, and any lows take half from us. So
exactly.
I mean,
this is a really dangerous hand.
Yeah. So I just don't see any reason to waste money with people left to act behind me. I'm just gonna wait and see what happens.
And this is another good lesson on why you don't play this no limit, right?
Yeah.
So if you're using my logic here, or I'm gonna take a $3 stab, really, I should probably be taking a $10 stab here.
Yeah.
If my goal is to get everybody to fold and win this pot, then I need to bet a substantial amount to make that happen, and the fact that the cap is taken off for some reason allows me to do that, and that's why it's not normally dealt that way.
Yeah.
So the $3 here is probably not going to be enough to get somebody to fold that has something.
So you want to take a $10 stab now and go back in history and revise it?
You know, I'm thinking through my idea here. My idea here is to bet, hope that, like I said, that everybody else's low got crippled, and at this high, there's really not an exciting high out there. You know, obviously somebody could have 6-7 or something like that, or a set is possible. But
right.
So you know, if I can get everybody's lukewarm about their hand and fold, now I've just picked up $3. So maybe to affect that, I need to bet more, which obviously could be a problem as well too. If we're overbetting the pot with a bad hand too.
It's Omaha. And somebody very easily could have 6-7 because if they had ace-3, they would have raised pre-flop. If they had ace, you know what I mean? So it's like for me to put $10 out there knowing that 6-7 could easily have checked to me or bet behind me. And then it's like, oh, now I've just lost $10 and I only have 100 in front of me or whatever it is for in a no-limit game.
Well, you haven't technically lost $10. I mean, if you're betting 10 and get called, then you're still going to see one more card and it could boat up. And if they have 6-7, then the boat's going to be good, right?
Right.
It's a different story if somebody bet $10 and then you're like, all right, I'll call and see whether.
But you have people to act behind you.
That's terrible. Oh, absolutely. No,
they can have 6-7, so when you make the $10 bet, now you've lost $10 when he makes it 40, and you have to fold.
Well, yeah, if you raise, that's different. Now you've lost $10.
Yeah. So I'm worried about being raised off of that for no reason. So I'm just going to check. Because no limit hold 'em, and the nuts is out there already. Could be out there, and I've got three pairs. It's just doesn't seem. And it's Omaha. That's the thing. Any two cards could be in their hands in Omaha because half of the people who learn how to play this game, they just fall in love with two cards in their hand. They go with that not even realizing they have 6-7, and then they have it. And you butt into these people in a no-limit game. It scares me. So I'm going to check. You're going to bet $3. Here comes part two.
Hello again. What's the move here? I think if we check, the cutoff is going to bet no matter what. He's got position, so he'll most likely take a stab at this, even with garbage. We have a decent high, and at least a backdoor low. It won't take much for us to bet and find out, A, if he really likes his hand, 2, if he kinda likes his hand, or C, if he doesn't like his hand at all. A moderate bet met with a raise will tell us if we're way out of our element here. A bet and a call, we may still have a chance in this one. A bet and 2 folds would be the best case scenario. There's only $3 in the pot, so we put out a bet of $2. The cutoff makes it 8 to go, and the small blind folds. Well, there's our answer. We fold. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley saying, sometimes you bet for more than one reason. That's what we did here. I hope to see you on the felt.
All right, obviously I mentioned some downsides to betting, and this is one of them. We obviously can't call this raise, so we have to fold, and we can assume that our opponent would have bet even had we checked, and the result would have been the same. But I guess there's a little tiny possibility that he might have taken the free card as well, so we had a shot to boat up.
Yeah. Yeah, the raise tells me he's got 6-7, or he's got ace-3, or I just don't want to be guessing for half the pot if that's what it ends up being. So
right, yeah, it might not even be half the pot. That's the problem here, too. I mean, and O'Malley even mentioned a backdoor low. No, you don't have no backdoor low here.
Yeah, no.
You get a live deuce.
Yeah.
And that's not going to win you half the pot. That if you have a live deuce, you're almost always going to be quartered.
Yeah.
No one turns over live anything and doesn't get quartered.
Folding works for me. I wouldn't even bet that, too. So I'm happy to get out for just $2 loss there.
All right, it's time for Hand of the Week. Send your hands or situations to podcast@antiupmagazine.com. And Chris, remember last week we were going to try to squeeze in 2 situations from our good friend Michael Paul.
Yes.
And then we just went on and on and on.
It was ended up being a good
like
situation.
It's a bingo.
You like to put yourselves in good situations, and that's what we had last week.
And then I went to look at the next one, and there were a lot of words on the page. So I'm like, you know what, hey. We'll make this a to be continued. So we're back on Michael Paul. And those of you that haven't listened last week, this is from a 1-2 no-limit game in a casino. And this situation, he starts the hand with just over $300, has both opponents covered. Villain 1 has about $200 to start. Villain 2 has about $150. And we are in late position with Jack 10 of spades. And he says, Villain 1 is a good player, he plays good hands, and is somewhat aggressive when he has a hand. He doesn't seem to bluff too often, and generally makes the correct mathematical play. For example, he doesn't chase every draw when faced with a big bet. Villain 2 is just an average player, so Scott or Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
A bit too aggressive at times.
Mm-hmm. So, more like me, yeah.
Villain 1 limps, Villain 2 limps, and and one other player limps. So it limps to us in late position, again, with Jack 10 of spades.
All right, so it's 1-2 no limit hold'em we're talking about, right?
Yep.
Well, it's a situation, though. Am I supposed to start doing this like a hand of the week? Or?
It seems like there's a lot going on here, so we'll do it like a hand of the week, and if it turns into a situation of the weekend.
You know, I'm just going to limp. I have a suited Jack 10. I mean, it's not the kind of hand that, Yeah, you could raise with it if you know you can get these guys all the fold and you're going to get heads up with it and represent as a bigger hand in that and then surprise them with the Jack-10. But this is the kind of hand I love to just have as many people in the pot as possible, have the drawing odds for the hand, and then just take it from there. I see no reason to risk more money if I don't need to. Why not just limp along with them? And if I'm going to raise, what did he raise to?
Well, we haven't done anything yet.
Oh, okay. I thought you said he raised.
No.
Oh, okay. So,
if I did, I didn't mean to. It was a premature.
Oh, okay. Game. Well, if I'm going to raise, it's going to be a decent amount because so many people have limped. But I would limp. So,
I'm going to guess that if we did a Gallup poll on this hand, you'd be right around 50-50.
Yeah, probably.
I think there's a good argument here. I think you're right. You know, this is a great, it's not really set mining, obviously, because it's not a set, but it's a good mining hand, right? We got a lot of limpers. We got a hand that can flop a lot of different stuff. And so if we get in cheap for $2 and stack someone, that's a good way of doing it. And then the other school of thought is, hey, there's a lot of dead money out there. I've got a hand that could flop really well. So let me raise right now. And if I take it down, that's great. I don't have to flop well. If I build a pot, I still have a hand that's going to flop well. And plus, since I raised, I have the ability to represent a lot of different hands. So I think it's probably 50-50 on which way people would go.
Let me ask you, too. I mean, I think when we used to have Lee on the show a lot, we talked about you want to play suited connectors in position. So this is perfect because we're in position. So I want to play the hand. I don't want to, you know, if I raise and take $6, it's like, okay, well, I had no potential there now.
Exactly.
You know, so yeah. I want to just call.
Yeah, this is a stacky hand here, right?
Yeah.
So I would say this is one of the things where I think it's a different tournament or cash game. Tournament, obviously, the blinds are getting bigger. You need to gather chips when you can. So I might be more inclined to raise in a tournament than when a cash game. A cash game, I'm just sitting there getting fat all day.
Yeah.
Waiting for that great flop where I'm going to stack everybody, right?
So, yep.
I mean, I might as well just throw the $2 in. I got a lot of people in here that are going to pay me off if I hit. Yeah, I think I'm going to live.
Okay.
Tournament, I might be...
different situation.
I might talk myself into raising.
Right.
All right, well, hero raises to $10. I think we're going to say that's probably not good, right?
No.
If you're going to raise, it needs to be more than that. Ten's what I start with.
Yeah, 10's what I would raise, and no one limped. Probably 20, maybe?
20, right?
Yeah, 20, yeah.
Yeah. He says, hey, I probably could have raised more, but maybe only a few bucks more. And he says that it's still only 10 jack suited. Well, you know that. The other people at the table don't know that.
That's right, they don't know
unless
that.
Unless you're not, protecting your cards well. So again, that's one of the advantages of raising, though, is people don't know what you have. I mean, you could easily have ace-ace.
Yep.
Definitely think you need more. Well, I mean, this goes back to what we... In fact, actually, it was last week's hand, right?
I don't know. You haven't told me yet.
Well, no, but he had, like, the pocket eights, right? And
oh, yeah.
And he's like, you know, I wanted to set mine. And I made the point that you could still set mine at a higher amount, right?
Yeah.
So the $10 here is really just building the pot for when he hits his Jack-10. It really doesn't give you the full advantage of a raise.
Right.
Which allows you to take control of the hand, right? He's not taking control of anything here. He's just building the pot.
Yeah, especially with three limpers.
Yeah.
I mean, really, $10 is nothing.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if we lost anybody here. So, let's see. It says, at any rate, villain one, villain two calls, and the fourth player folds. All right, so we lost one.
How bad does the fourth player's hand have to be getting, like, right, 5-1 in his money if he came along?
That was an action, right?
He came along in the first place.
He doesn't have to worry about anybody raising behind him. So
jeez.
$8 to win, yeah.
To win, like, $50. I mean, really, come on.
Wow.
Whatever.
Yeah. Although I'm going to suspect that two of the three people left in his hand are going to wish that they would have folded.
That's true.
So that maybe this guy's the smartest one of the four. All right. Flop comes down. King of spades, queen of hearts, tray of spades.
That's pretty nice.
Pretty good, right?
Pretty nice. Open-ended straight flush, open-ended straight draw, and a flush draw. Not too bad.
Plus, one of the cards above us in the straight or flush is out, so we only have to fade
the queen of spades and the ace of spades.
Yep.
Yeah. That's nice.
All right, before it gets to us, villain one bets $30, and villain two moves all in for $150.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'm out. I mean, I realize that I have a lot of outs, but I really have jack high right now.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to risk pretty much, what, 50, what do you say? You start with 300 or so. Yeah. Half my stack, more than half my stack, on a draw that's a good draw. Unless I'm just like in like a tilty mood, or you know, I'm flush with cash from the whole week of playing.
Reasons,
you know,
right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like, you know what? Another hand's coming in 30 seconds. Why am I going to risk my entire stack? And I don't even know, you know, if that $30 guy might even come along, go all in too. Now, yeah, okay, it'll be a big pot, but I'm facing guys who clearly will have a flush draw and what looks like a set or something.
So if he comes along, it's going to cost us an extra 50 on top.
Yeah, so now you're looking at $200.
Well, $200, so yeah, it's a little less, an extra. Well, that's weird, because the other guy started with 150. Eh, whatever.
Well, either way.
So yeah, it's going to be a little bit more. Right?
Yeah, either it's going to be. So let's say it's about $200, and we're going to go in on with Jack High and hope we hit one of the cards. And if we hit, we're not hitting the nuts easily. Someone could have a baby ace suited. Somebody could, especially in the way this hand came down.
You could hit your nine or your ace here and then lose on the redraw.
Yeah.
To someone with a higher flush draw, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's just not. Yeah. Let's say the ace of spades comes and. Or, you know, I mean, ace comes. There's just so many combinations of these last two cards that could make you lose, and you still only have Jack High right now. I
think to me the big difference here is the fact that if we were villain two, it would make sense to make this bet. Maybe not 150, but a bigger bet, right? To raise on the come?
I will raise on the come a lot. But I wouldn't shove.
Right, but there's a difference between raising on the come and calling on the come.
Right? Yeah, right.
And that's where we're in now.
Right.
You know.
Exactly right.
Because when you raise on the come, you have the potential of getting everybody to fold.
Right. There's two ways to win. Semi-bluff, classic theory of poker. You have two ways to win. And that's the thing. Here, you're calling. It's like I always say to my wife when we first started playing poker. You don't have to have it to go all in. You have to have it to call all in.
Yes.
You know, and the same thing here. You don't have to have it to make that raise, but you better have it if you're going to call 200 bucks or the potential of 200 bucks here. Jack
High. This is one of those where you take those two cards and you tap the table like, oh, I really want to see that next card.
Yeah, you put on the big old Hollywood show and then you muck. Then you watch the first villain turn over bigger.
You don't actually have to see it, right?
I don't like to do that.
Just paying out a jackpot and like, oh!
I don't like to do that. You know, a lot of people say that. I got to see it. And then it's like, you know what? You're going to see 50 hands of this guy in the next hour and a half. You're going to get the information you need at some point anyway. Why pay to see it?
Right.
Stupid.
All right. Since I don't think much figuring, I've got a good draw only behind the ace of spades or the queen of spades, but I've also got a straight draw just in case. I don't think villain two would shove with just a draw, but it's possible. I think it's entirely possible, actually.
Yeah.
He could have two pair or a set, but I decided it's worth the gamble, and I shove all in. I figure if I'm behind, I have my flush and straight outs. Of course, you could also have the queen of spades, which takes away my flush outs. And if he's on a flush draw as well, I lose two flush outs. Of course, if he's got the ace of spades or the queen of spades, then I'm not looking so good. Yeah, so...
Yeah, I wanted to interrupt, but I wanted to wait till you finish saying it.
Like, Michael, I love you, but you're giving yourself all these reasons not to... Not to call, I won't show, and then he did anyhow. Right?
Yeah, he says, "I figure if I'm behind, I have my flush and straight outs." No, you are behind.
There's no way you're ahead right now.
Right now, you have Jack High. There is no hand that you are ahead of, except for maybe eight, you know, or nine spade something, 9-8 of spades or something. But the other guy, one of these guys, you are behind. So you have your flush and straight outs, but the flush outs might not be good. And then now you can't even fall on the straight outs because a flush could come first. So, yeah, you are behind.
Yeah, and against three players, you got a lot of potential here, too. I mean, a potential of heartache, I mean, as well. I mean, you could, if these hands are all turned over, somebody could have the ace of spades and another spade, right? So now you're rooting against the spades. And another guy could have some kind of Broadway combination that if your card comes, then you're splitting the pot with them, which is still better than losing, right? But
yep.
There's potential here that you really have no potential of winning more than half the pot.
And you could be up against other draws that if you make your pair to pull ahead what you think would be ahead of, they end up making the Broadway themselves, like Ace-Jack.
There's no way you want to see a Jack or 10.
Yeah, so you're just in a lot of trouble here. Yeah. I would never get my money in this way.
Yeah, again, much different if you were the one shoving before the big race. But
yeah.
All right, we'll see. So, to his surprise, he says villain one calls, so we're all in three ways for 550-ish. All right, run good. One time.
One time, baby. One time.
Says nobody flips over the cards. The turn is the ace of spades.
Nice.
That's probably a good card for us. So
yeah.
Second that flush. With a redraw of the royal flush. Now
that's true.
River is the queen of clubs.
Okay.
The final board of king of spades, tray of spades, queen of hearts, ace of spades, queen of clubs. Board pairs is never good, right?
Never a good pair on the board.
Turn over my flush. Villain two turns over 9-8 of spades. Hey. The lower flush. Look at it, you called that.
I called that.
So Mike's at home. He's like, yeah, you said I wasn't ahead.
Yeah, but what about the other guy?
It's Cosenza now.
The other guy.
Villain one turns over queen three for a flop two pair and a river full.
Oh, queen three. I was thinking king queen was how we were going to lose his hand, but
yeah, queen three is tough.
But then I thought king queen might raise free flop.
Again, our $10 raise isn't going to. I mean, of course, villain one really shouldn't have been in. That was the first call, right? So I mean, gosh, can you imagine that call?
Oof. Queen three
makes
limping.
It kind of a min raise to $10. We call with two more players that act after us.
Wow.
And again, that's a different story than the guy that folded that we're talking about. We're kind of mocking for getting out. What kind of hand could you add? That's a different story. I mean, villain one, I mean, I would drop that queen tray in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
For a raise.
Wow, that's brutal. I thought it was going to be king queen, but like I said, I thought maybe king queen might raise pre-flop, so then I kind of dismissed that when you were reading off the turn and river there. Because that's what you always do with hand of the week in situations. You figure out, okay, how are we going to lose this hand? How's it going to lose?
Yeah.
Well, I never thought queen tray. That's crazy.
That's brutal. So, yeah, so I am sitting here. I'd be ecstatic to just lose $2 on this hand with queen tray. This guy wins 550.
Wow. $550 on queen tray.
Which is good that that guy won the pot. I mean, if we can't win the pot, we want that guy to win the pot, right? Because we know we got a pretty good shot of getting that money back.
Yeah, I guess. And you know that's going to be that guy's favorite hand now for the rest of his life. He's going to lose all that $550.
Tell you about the fucking 15.
The good news is that he'll lose that $550 back playing Queen 3 the rest of his life.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. So he's so, the
right guy. Hope you can play him.
All right. So a lot of verbiage here. So let's see what he was saying. He says, just looking for thoughts on this one. I don't think it was wrong, but I wanted your opinions in case I was not looking at all the information correctly. All right, we gave you a lot more to look at.
Yeah.
He says, clearly I'm behind when I shove. I recognize this. I have no pair yet. But if I don't consider villain two to be on a flush draw, I have 9 flush outs and 6 straight outs to make my hand. I guess I wasn't sure that villain one would call in the first place. Yeah, I think that's kind of a problem because he led out for 30. Now, there's a possibility he was just taking a stab there, but probably not, right?
Right.
So if this guy shoves, I got to figure that there's a good chance that he's going to come along. So I don't think you can count on him folding. Now, obviously, he bet out, so I wouldn't put him on a draw either, right? So, if he doesn't put villain two on a draw, then we should feel like our outs are good. Which they were.
It's hard not to put either one of these players on draws to me. I know a lot of people who would bet out with a flush draw, especially the nut flush draw there.
Oh, yeah.
And I know plenty who would come over the top all in with a flush
draw. My favorite move is to bet out, and then when I hit it on the turn, check.
Check, yeah.
I'm scared, right? Because it makes sense. You're telling the story, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I want to protect my hand against the flush draw. Oh, damn, I call. I came. I'm going to slow down. Someone bets. I'm like, ha ha.
I'm going to file that away now for the next time we play in a
home
game.
All the chips. Yeah, no, I do that all the time.
So. I know.
But it doesn't happen. I don't know what the percentage of times that actually works out.
Yeah.
But when it does, it's glorious.
I'll just keep it away in the Rolodex. And
all right, so he says, as it turns out, he has the only made hand with two pair. But after the hand, he said he never considered that either of his opponents had a set. That seems pretty weird. Of course, this guy's playing queen tray for a raise, so not going to go to him for poker advice. You know, I mean, maybe ante up PokerCast and then this guy. That order, right?
All right.
Since he had queen tray, having a pair of queens or threes may be less likely, and maybe if either of us had kings in our hand, we would have raised more or re-raised pre-flop. So maybe I can give him credit for this logic. But either of us could easily have king-queen in our hand, at which point he's calling two all and cold to the bottom two pair. That makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, but again, I thought some players would raise a king-queen in a limped pot to thin the field, too, pre-flop. So that is a plausible hand to limp with, but I feel like more people would raise with it than not.
Right. But yeah, in a $10 pot, though, I'm worried about King Queen. That's a legitimate hand for somebody to have.
Yeah.
It shouldn't, but for $10, I see people play that all day long.
Well, I mean, preflop, they would have limped. They wouldn't have limped with Queen King Queen, probably. They probably would have raised before it got to us making it 10, I thought.
Depends. It could be one of the blinds, though.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who. I guess
that's true, too. There's no indication who these guys are.
You know, these villains were actually before us, so it doesn't really matter. So, yeah, you're right. So, all right. So, it says, I looked up the hand online afterwards just to see, and once we know everybody's cards, villain one was 54.7% favored on the flop to win, and I was 43.7% favored, slightly worse than a flip.
Right.
I recognize well, again, right, so it's flipping. So, I mean, so you're calling off to flip.
Right.
And that's just a bad situation to be in a non-tournament. Because you're going to have so many better options where you're ahead of the game. Or you have the potential of getting the guy to fold.
Yep.
It says, I recognize I got lucky to make my flush on the turn, so I'm not complaining about the fact that I then got outdrawn on the river. I guess I'm just wondering not only if I did the right thing, but if I put myself in villain's one position, was calling in that spot the correct thing to do. I guess it probably was, since he's getting 2-1 on his money on what effectively is a flip. But there's still some hands he could have been behind. The way he acted after the fact didn't seem to be too concerned. So yeah, we're pretty sure that that guy played it worse than anyone and won the pot.
Well, you know, the other thing too is if you can recall your history of World Series final tables, I'm fairly certain, wasn't it the hand that everyone second-guessed Paul Wasika on?
Oh, yeah.
Right, where it ended up being that he had, like, a flush draw that was 10 high or something, but then it went, like, bet, shove, and the shove just happened to be a tournament leader, Jamie Gold. And it's like he could have made, like, $30 million on that hand and been the chip leader if he gets there, because he had, like, a straight and a flush draw or something really powerful, but it wasn't the nuts or something. And so he got out of the way because he's like, well, I'm going to be playing second now, you know, if this guy goes out, and ended up being a decent move, but everyone was like, whoa, how did you let that hand go at that moment? You could be the massive chip leader heads up for the world title.
Right.
And then he's saying, yeah, but I would have gone out, I could have gone out third and then had nothing, you know. But so, I mean, that's what's going on here. When somebody goes $30 on this kind of a board and another guy shoves, your Jack 10 can't be good, and neither can that 8-9. And 8-9, I can see the 8-9 folding very easily if we call now. That's why that's what I'm talking about here. That's what he was talking about, how he thinks it's okay for him to call there, but I don't think it is. I think at that point, you got to think someone has ace, rag of spades, and the other guy's got a set or two pair or a straight draw, and you're having to hit cards that won't give him a straight. You know, it's to me, I can fold that 8-9 easily.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's interesting that he shoved there. But so I guess his next thing, and I think this is actually a good thing to talk about too. He says, I know I could have raised more preflop and maybe queen tray off doesn't call, but how much more? Personally, I don't play queen three off for $10, so I guess I didn't consider that as an option.
Yeah.
Fair enough. He says, if I had been holding king queen, I guess that would have made me feel a little bit better that he got there, since it's a better preflop holding, even though the end result would have been the same. So what I'm wondering is, let's go back to our discussion that if we would have limped, like we were thinking, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much does the queen tray guy bet on that flop?
Yeah, so there's only like $8 right? in the pot, yeah. So then the first guy who was...
So if he bets pot, $8, right?
Right.
Is the other guy now going to shove over top of a $8 bet?
Yeah, definitely not, because he probably did the old, okay, there's a ton in the pot already when he bet 30, and if I go three times that, it's 90, I only have 150. That's why he's shoving, whereas if it was an $8 bet, $8 pot, then it goes, okay, the guy's going to bet 6, and he might make it 18. If you have 150 in front of you, betting 18 is not a big deal. It's not, hey, I'm going to shove because I'm already betting 18. That's only a little more than 10%. I mean, you're a stack, so you're right. If we go right. The limp.
So if he bets 8 or 10, and then the 9-8 guy, let's assume he's going to raise, because obviously he raised, right?
Right.
To what, maybe 40?
Yeah, 30, 50. 40.
And then we're obviously going to call that, because we got a hand that can do a lot at that point, right?
Right.
I think. Now, we don't know whether the villain 1 then is going to repop.
Right.
Because he didn't have that option the way this hand played, because it was all in, right?
Right.
Although, I guess he did. He did. We raise all in. So, yeah, so maybe he would have still raised it, and we still got in the same situation. But if not, if we just call the 50 and he just calls the 50 or the extra 40 or whatever, right? Then we hit our gin card.
And then we shove.
And then it's easier for us to make that call, I think. And it's harder for the queen three guy to make that call. So now he's out of the hand, and now we're up against the 9-8 and have him crushed.
Right, well, villain one bets first, so when that flush gets there, villain one is the queen tray guy, right?
Right, so he's not going to... What I'm saying is he's not going to bet that turn.
Right, he might slow down that
turn. The 9-8 guy obviously is going to bet it, and then at that point, we just got to figure out whether he's got the king.
Or the ace or
the queen. Whatever the card that's better than us.
Right, we shove.
But the ace is on the turn, so...
I can't imagine not shoving after that if somebody bets out a good $40 on that.
Right, exactly. And so, I can't imagine the queen three guy.
Queen three's got to let
Although,
it go.
Again, this guy is pretty crazy. So.
Yeah.
But when that's ace... That's our path to victory here.
Three spades and three Broadway showing to his bottom pair, middle pair, he's probably letting it go once we finally put 200 in the middle or whatever it is, so... But if he doesn't, then you're screwed. But he might. So there is a different way to play it. But again, a lot of ifs in there. A lot of ifs to get to that point. You know. Right. And like I said, you don't want to be results oriented. But I would have just called preflop.
I'm not sure I'm being results oriented. I think it's because again, we're talking about how we would have played it.
Yeah, I guess.
That's the way we said we would have played it before we knew what happened. Right?
Yeah, I guess so.
You can't be results oriented if you already said you were going to play it a different way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We did say we were going to limp, so. Hmm. All right, cool.
Interesting.
All right. Well, everyone have a happy holiday, and we'll see you on New Year's Day. I'm Chris Crescenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 206-338-6344. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@anteupmagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.